Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve.
One in four women give birth by cesarean.
And it really is about time we made sure that every woman who gives birth abdominally feels she has had an individualized, empowered, and truly a positive cesarean birth. I'm super excited to be joined this week by the wonderful Amy Lane, award-winning digital editor for Women's Health, host of Wellfar, an inspirational running podcast, and author of I Can Run. But on top of all of this incredible work, Amy is also mum to two beautiful boys, Huxley, and more recently, she welcomed little Beau into the world through a gentle cesarean section birth. And I cannot wait to talk about this experience and ways in which we can help assure that a cesarean is a positive birthing experience for all. So welcome, Amy, and thank you so much for managing to squeeze me into the mum life juggle. I'm very grateful.
Oh, thanks for having me back on. I'm happy to speak to an adult.
That's so true, isn't it? Yeah, you are a repeat guest, which is exciting. But we're on like a completely different topic this time, which is super personal to you. And I guess the journey that you've been on recently. And I totally appreciate the speaking to an adult. Singing nursery rhymes just isn't the same, is it?
I've sang Wheels on the Bus, I would say, probably about 50 times in the past 24 hours. And we've got to the point where we're now having to do various animals on the bus because there's just not enough things on the bus to do.
It is amazing what you can get on that bus. Finley's got a little book that you press a button and it like sings the theme tune. But he now knows how to press the button. So we just have the theme tune of Wheels on the Bus going on repeat.
Hilarious.
Oh, it's all good fun. Now, Amy, I know you've spoken beautifully, openly about your, I guess, lead up to your gentle cesarean birth and the actual experience itself. But I just wonder, before we delve into what your birth looked like and what women can do who may also be having a planned cesarean, is where was your headspace at prior to your birth? Because I know it wasn't plan A for you, was it, a cesarean?
No, it really wasn't. So with my first boy, Huxley, 20 months ago, so I'm doing the two under two. I'd planned for a natural birth, as natural as it could possibly be. And I've now realised that I hate using the term natural and birth because I just feel like all births should be seen as natural and there's just different ways to bring babies into the world. And that's something that I have to keep reminding myself to keep me in a good headspace about things that my journey, I suppose, my motherhood journey. But with him, I ended up having a really traumatic birth. I got diagnosed with obstetric cholestasis late on in my pregnancy with him. And it wasn't my acid levels weren't high enough for them to intervene, but it was something that had been flagged. Anyway, I went into natural labor at 37 and 5 with him. So a couple of weeks early, if you like. And I went into natural labor at home. And then I went up the hospital quite early because I needed to have a blood test. And anyway, I was all prepared in my head to have this like water birth and it all to be very calm. And unfortunately, it didn't happen like that. And I ended up in theatre in quite a traumatic situation. And Huxley, Sorry, I keep getting their name.
Two under two.
Two under two. Huxley had 3 days in special care. We were both in for a week. And it just left me with real mental scars. And he was really poorly, actually, for those 3 days. And when I came to being pregnant again, we tried to do a bit more of a like unpicking what happened. And there was definitely things that happened which were happened in the moment that should not have happened. And there's been, unfortunately, a big investigation into it. But there was probably but obstetric cholestasis probably also played a part in that delivery, which nobody really knew at the time, that actually Huxley was in so much distress. And there is, you know, there is thought that actually that could have been linked to the obstetric cholestasis. So when that reared its ugly head again in this pregnancy, and
I bet that was like just like a kick in the teeth when you got that diagnosis.
Well, it was, because I'd done so much physical and mental prep to get myself in a good place for this birth. And I was under the home birth team, and I was talking to the, you know, I was still seeing the psychologists, and everything was kind of, we had these, I would say, plans. I hate using the word plans because they are more preferences, but we basically put together this kind of like plan for all the different scenarios and how I could feel safe and how we could create a safe environment. And so I was like really, really ready to have him at home if I could, and if not, to be back in the hospital, but not in the same theatre that I'd gone into previously. And then at 39 weeks, no, so at 38 weeks, the itching started again, which is one of the signs of cholestasis. And I went into the hospital, and they did my levels, but they were like, oh, they're not that high, you know, you're fine. But we want to repeat the bloods in 3 days' time. So I was like, okay, brilliant. And so I was still under the care of the home, home care team. And then I went back in for my repeat bloods again, and they said, oh, they've gone up a little bit. Let's repeat them again in a few days' time. In fact, I think it was a week's time. Yeah, so sorry, it's all kind of...
The weeks just jumped, don't they, when you're pregnant?
Yeah, it's all jumping. So it all started again at 36 and a half weeks. And then I got tested, and then it was a week later. And then they did two more tests anyway. It got to the point where by their dates, because my dates and their dates didn't quite sync up, but by their dates, I was 39 weeks. And the levels had just gone the wrong side of what they felt safe with. And although, you know, the risk of stillbirth didn't jump dramatically, there was still this slightly increased risk of stillbirth. And because of what happened last time, I just didn't want to take any risks with going through a labour and having a baby who was really distressed. And I didn't want to also be induced with the hormone drip, because that's what I had last time, even though I'd gone into natural labour. Because I had so much meconium in my waters, they wanted to speed it up. So I got put on the hormone drip. And I feel like for me, that was just like the start of a chain reaction of errors and just choices, which looking back on it, I wish I hadn't made. Mm-hmm. And so when I got this diagnosis with Beau, I just knew that actually I just wanted him here safely. And for me, when I was looking at all the research, the safest way to get him here was to go into a managed cesarean situation, which is what I did. And I was really, really fortunate that it was a consultant who'd seen me a couple of times in the day assessment unit. And so she gave me the news. And when she gave me the news, she was really, really fantastic, because she was very sympathetic and empathetic to my situation, because I've obviously got a notes file like a Harry Potter book, I think, which probably has a big red stamp on the front which says fragile.
Treat with TLC.
And she kind of delivered the diagnosis and said, you know, this is the situation, what do you want to do? I know you don't want to do the induction. Like, our thoughts are we would, you know, like you to go for a cesarean, and I'm going to talk to my colleagues who are going to be here next week and make sure they know your backstory, and we're going to make this as positive for you as we can. And so that was that. So then I was booked in. So I went from on the Thursday still thinking I was having a home birth, but being aware of the fact that I had this kind of complication in the background, to being booked in for them going, no, your levels are too high, and being booked in for a planned cesarean on the Monday. So yeah, it was quite a last minute change, and it wasn't something that I'd really prepared for, because in my head I just thought, you know, second birth, I'd had one baby vaginally, yes, it was really complicated and traumatic, but you know, everything seemed to be stacked in my favor for like a calm vaginal birth, and then obviously didn't happen, planned C-section.
A massive like headspace shift, isn't it? Like a huge, I know you kind of started to perhaps prepare that plan A may start to move, but was there still like a hope that actually the bloods would be okay and you'd be able to have that home birth? Was there always that like little bit of a hope until you had that initial conversation?
Yeah, there really was. And I think there's two reasons for it. So I think one of the reasons was I felt like I still needed that birth experience. I still needed to be in a pool with the fairy lights, you know, doing the breathing and the affirmations, because I just feel like that I've always grieved that birth that I never had. And so that was really hard, because it was suddenly like, that's off the table. And then the other part of it was, hang on a minute, sorry, I've just forgotten the question.
I love
midway
it.
Through answering. God, you can tell that I've got two children and one 3 months old, can't you? Sorry.
Absolutely fine.
Stop it. Let's
where were we?
Let's
what are we talking
back.
About?
Yeah.
I love it. So that kind of hope that you would still have that plan A birth up until that point.
So
that's how we were.
That reason, exactly, that I felt like I still needed that birth, because I grieved it from my first pregnancy, and I wanted it to be really, really healing. And I still felt a little bit like my body had failed me, even though I'd done all of that work. And then the second part of it, when it was such a shift, was being quite apprehensive about having surgery and then having like an 18 month at home. And that was terrifying to me, because I've got a brilliant, brilliant partner who really, really does pitch in, and he does as much as he can around his full-time job. But there are still things that, you know, he wouldn't be able to do. Like, for instance, when Huxley wants comforting and he just wants his mum, I just still wanted to be able to give that to him. And the thought of not being able to lift him in and out of his cot for 6 weeks or do bath time, and just being a little bit marooned where we live, not being able to go out and see people unless I could get a lift, because you can't drive. And so that was just that whole kind of like, actually, I'm not going to be up and about straight away after having my baby, and what does the next 6 weeks look like? That took a lot of kind of like mental energy to kind of process, I suppose, and to plan and to try and make going into the C-section on the Monday a positive experience. But what I would say is, to be completely honest, the 3 days between booking the C-section and arriving at the hospital were quite emotional.
I can imagine, yeah.
And I just didn't, because it just wasn't my plan, and I just really struggled with it. And so there was so many tears. But then when I got there, I knew it was the right choice. And deep down, I did know it was the right choice. It was processing it that was tough.
One of the things you said there, Amy, which is something I hear all the time, and in all honesty is probably the reason for my podcast, my courses, my page, all the stuff I put out there, is what you said about you felt like your body had failed you because you didn't have that birth that we see on like the adverts for hypnobirthing courses. And that I think is really interesting, because I hear that, honestly, Amy, I hear that all of the time. And I just think, as women, we are ridiculously hard on ourselves, because how on earth can our bodies fail us when they have created and grown a whole new human life? And then we go through things like, you know, general anaesthetics, major abdominal surgery, hours and hours of exhausting labours. We go through all that and then we feel like we're failures when what we've just done is like absolutely incredible. One of the hardest things, one of the furthest we're ever going to push our bodies physically and psychologically. And then we're like, oh, we failed. And if that was our best friend, there is no way we would speak to him in that way. We'd be like, oh my goodness, you were incredible. Like, I'm so proud of you. But when it's us, we're like, rubbish, that was awful. And like, and I just, and I hear it all the time for women who perhaps plan a water birth and may opt to have an epidural, or, you know, they get to the end of their labour and they have forceps, or like, you know, they go for a scheduled or planned cesarean birth. And I just think, how, you know, a cesarean is major abdominal surgery. To go through that to save your baby's life is like the most courageous thing we can ever do. And I think we really, like you said at the beginning, have to start recontextualising the way we look at birth, because there are so many ways that it can look. And actually, only a very small minority of births look like we see on the hypnobirthing adverts. But if we only prepare for that, where does that leave us? Like, if we've decided that's all it's going to look like, we've got nowhere to go if it's not like that. If we're in that, you know, that large percentage where it doesn't go to plan A, we've got nowhere to turn, have we?
No, and it's hard, isn't it? Because when you're doing the hypnobirthing courses, which I really respect, and they, you know, they did teach me a lot, you're told to shut out all of what is seen as a negative birth story. And I actually realized that when I was preparing for like my second birth, that I didn't actually find that, personally, I didn't find that that helpful, because actually all I was being exposed to were kind of almost like textbook births. And actually, you know, I think that's why I also found it really hard to process my first birth, because it was so far from that experience that, and obviously it was really traumatic, and, you know, I am 1 in 100,000 apparently. So, you know,
great. Just the odd you want to be in when it comes to birth, right? It's not the lottery.
I know. An accolade I really didn't want. But when it came to preparing for my second birth, I felt like I needed to have actually a better awareness of all types of birth, because by only reading and, you know, by only reading and exposing myself to the births that didn't have any challenges or complications, then actually if things didn't go that way, then suddenly I'm seeing mine as less of an experience to theirs, or, you know, suddenly mine was problematic and theirs wasn't. And so I just really kind of like researched and like seeked out the stories which maybe had kind of a few challenges that, you know, people had to overcome, so that I could, yeah, form a bit of a different opinion about what birth, you know, really does look like. Because it's not just birthing pools, is it? And, you know, God, I really still wish I did. I have, you know, I really still wish that I could have had that experience, but I didn't. And so that's why I think I'm really keen to talk openly about my experiences, to actually normalize the fact that, you know, some women don't have that experience, and let's see what positives we can take from it, or like what positives can you put into the planning in case this happens? And then kind of how do you process it afterwards?
Oh, Amy, you're talking to a delivery sweet sister. Like, I see complex birth all the time. And I think quite often, we've definitely got to get this like balance with medicalization and not. Like, it can be used, it's like used when it, perhaps it's not the best thing for sure, but also it saves lives, right? Childbirth isn't, we're now in an era where it's safer than ever. And that's because of medical intervention and things like inductions and cesarean birth. And I feel like we have to get that balance right. And I think the more we sometimes push against medicalization, the more we kind of corner ourselves into only looking at that textbook birth. And then, you know, we can't push out of those walls. And I think it's really important that we recognize that appropriate use of medical intervention is a brilliant thing that actually we should understand and learn to accept and embrace as part of normal birth. And I hate that term normal, but we have to normalize all types of birth, right? It is all normal and natural, however that looks and happens, I think. Just a quick pause to share an extra tip with you on cesarean section birth. Remember to pack comfortable, loose clothing and big cotton knickers.
So there is nothing tight or uncomfortable on your scar. For more expert information, sign up to acticlub.co.uk.
Yeah, and that's what I had to actually do whilst I was trying to like make this decision of doing early delivery or not with Beau. I was like, am I basically making decisions because I am so want this like birth experience? Am I making decisions because it's something that I really want, as opposed to looking at the numbers about what's safest right now? And when I actually kind of like, you know, sat down with a pen and paper and I was like, what's safest for me, what's safest for baby, like what do the studies say, and you know, and I asked for all the risks and the benefits and I used my brain.
Brilliant tool, the brain tool. Love it. Nice and balanced.
It was actually then that I realized that, you know, getting Beau here early and in that cesarean, through a cesarean was the safest option for both of us. And then that's when I then was like, right, but how do I still make this experience something that is also healthy and happy for me? Because that's obviously what I didn't have the first time. So I was like, I need to make sure we both come out of this healthy, and that means both physically and mentally. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, amazing. Amy, can I take you back to your cesarean birth? And can you just sort of describe to me what that looked like, what that felt like for you?
So I've done quite a lot of research about gentle C-sections. So when I knew that I'd been booked in, for one, I'd heard the term bandied about, and you give it a Google and it seems to be that it's just like an overarching term for doing things in a bit more of a calm, I would say like a calm situation, with also various kind of preferences included. So, and people have different preferences, so it seems to be there's no one definition of a gentle C-section, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it was kind of like you could put in all of these preferences and then it's classed as a gentle C-section. One of the main things was that they try and walk the baby out, and I then kind of went on a bit of like an internet rabbit hole, definitely on Instagram, watching babies being walked out. And so I saw that and I was like, gosh, that feels like something which feels that would feel really good for me, because one of the things that I really wanted to try and, you know, help Beau with was having the squeeze. Because obviously they don't get squeezed when they have the C-section. And then as far as I'm aware, that can be where the complications can come from with lungs and breathing, because of all the fluid. And
you did all your research, Amy. I'm super impressed. I love it.
So when I saw these videos and then I understood more about the rationale that actually, you know, having the squeeze is really good for the baby, for their lungs, but also for their nervous systems, and actually not creating such a big cut for mum is also helps with recovery. That's kind of when I was like, right, I'm really into this whole gentle C-section approach. And I started to kind of like unpick what other people had done and put together my list of preferences, which was on the Friday. And then I frantically tried to get hold of the community midwife. And actually somebody phoned me back on Friday night, and I was like, can I do this? Can I do that? And went through the list and put it all down of what I would really like to happen. And so when I arrived on the Monday, I had my A4 sheet printed out, and I had multiple copies printed out so I could kind of share them with people. And it was like the universe had my back that day, because I went onto this ward and I arrived and they said to me, oh, we've got a little bit of a problem, which you never want to hear at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning.
When you've just got your head in this space, right? You just planned all of this.
Just arrived at hospital, got a little bit of a problem. You haven't had a COVID test. And I was like, no, I haven't. But I had COVID in January. And they were like, okay, so we're just going to have to like, we just need to put you in this room and just seal off this section of the ward whilst we figure out how we need to like do this today, because obviously you could have COVID. So let's just go speak to the lab. Anyway, they put my husband and I, Ted, in this room and went off and spoke to the lab. And in the meantime, I'd asked the midwife to read my notes, because they'd also tried to show me into the room where my last labour had started. And I was like,
that's just like makes me cringe.
Like, no. And I had all of this, like I said, of this giant fragile stamp across all my notes. So I just, you know, I asked very politely for her to go and read them while she was phoning the lab about COVID. And anyway, so she read them and she came back and she was like, I am so sorry. Let's get you in another room. Let's press reset. It does mean that with the COVID, because you've had COVID, we can't COVID swab you today because you could be showing as positive even though you don't have it. So it means that you're just going to stay in this room. Anyway, so it meant that I had my own wing of the maternity ward in Winchester.
Delightful.
Essentially. Delightful. And so we kind of just hung out by ourselves. And then she said, oh, you know, the anaesthetist will be around to talk to you, and then the consultant will be around to talk to you as well. Anyway, I wasn't expecting the consultant who walked in to walk in, because who walked in was the lovely consultant from the day assessment unit who had broken the news of needing to have the C-section, and she'd been called in on the Monday to cover somebody's shifts. And she walked in and she was like, hello. And I was just like, I literally was just welling up.
Amy, I've actually got goosebumps because I can feel like as you in that situation, that like that relief must have just been incredible. You knew you were going to be listened to and you were going to be heard.
Yeah. And because I'd seen her three times in day assessment, and also there'd been various things that happened along the way. And she just been part of this whole journey, and she understood how like it was real. It was a really, really tough experience to be back in that hospital for me. And so anyway, so she said, right, let's go through your preferences and let's see what we can do. And anyway, she basically explained to me that there was one of them. So I'd asked for delayed cord clamping to be done. And that was really important for me because that didn't happen with Huxley. And with Bo, I just really wanted it to happen if possible, because it just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And it just feels like one of those things that I look at and I'm like, actually, that's not just, that feels like there's just so many benefits to it that I'm on board with. So I asked for the delayed cord clamping, and she said, you know, the issue that we have is we don't like to actually do proper delayed cord clamping in theatre because it's much colder than in a normal delivery suite. And obviously you're open, the baby's in loads of liquid. And so we'll do the best that we can. But, you know, normally what happens is we do a certain amount of time, but we don't normally leave the whole cord attached until it's all gone white. I think she said they leave it a minute and then they cut the cord to a length, which then Dad cuts shorter. And I was like, oh, okay. That's just a bit of a shame, because I was hoping that like Ted could properly cut the cord, not just like a shortened version of it. And which, it's all detail, isn't it? But I think when you're so, you know, you haven't had the experience you wanted before, like this detail really matters. And so but I understood her reasons why, and I said, okay, I totally understand. And then I'd asked for him to be put straight on my chest rather than them doing the rubbing down in the checks, because one of my friends said to me when I was pregnant with Huxley, she said, the moment that your gooey baby is put on you, she was like, it's the best moment in the whole world. And she was like, you'll remember it for your whole life, and welling up. And obviously I didn't get that.
Yeah.
So I was like, I really want to try and get that moment if I can. And so I asked her about that, and she said, again, we will try and do that, but because the theatre is really cold, we do like to rub them down and wrap them up in towels, and we will put him on you as soon as possible. But all the other checks can be done in the back in the room. And so she was like, you don't need to be separated. We can 100% do that. He does not need to be weighed as soon as he comes out. That's normally just like hospital protocol to get the births registered. So I think it's like a time and efficiency 100%. Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the best thing for mum or baby. It's the best thing for hospital policy.
Yeah. And so She said, no, we don't need to do that, because that was one of my preferences. Can we do all of the checks that aren't necessary back in the room? And so she went away. And anyway, I didn't know this was happening, but they'd gone into theatre and they discussed how they could basically change the setup of the curtain to actually facilitate having the cord still attached and then him on my chest. And it was something that they just don't normally do. But because I'd requested it and she obviously knew my reasons why, she just went away and like figured it out and problem solved. And so this is very long, I'm sorry. And so we went into theatre and we had Lighthouse Family playing, Lifted.
Love it.
And
great choice.
Great choice. Yeah. And then I had the anesthetic done, and this isn't on Instagram because I kind of didn't want to scare anyone, but I had another high spinal experience. Oh, and so I know.
What is your back doing?
Well, I know there's something going on with it. But luckily enough, because they knew the backstory, they caught it just in time. And so actually it was fine. They sorted out the pain, the anaesthetic. And then when that was all calm and there was no more drama, they led me down. And that's when the positive experience really did start. And I'd asked them not to do, I'd asked for like no kind of theatre chat over my head. And I just really wanted to like zone in on my like breathing and my music. And I just didn't want to know what people were having for lunch. Like,
and you shouldn't when you're about to birth your baby, hear what Denise just said at the weekend.
And so exactly. And so, and you know, I'd asked for the lights to be dimmed. And actually they couldn't do that because of the theatre. So they just, they think they turned them off, and then there was windows, and then she had on one spotlight. So it was just a really kind of calm environment rather than staring up at bright lights. Mm-hmm. And then little did I know that they'd done this theatre setup with the curtain. So actually when they passed him to me, they put him straight on my chest, and then they rubbed him down on my chest, and you know, the midwife kept doing all the checks to make sure that he was pinking up and he was fine, and his breathing scores were okay. And he didn't leave me for an hour until we got back to the room. And then then he was taken off me. Well, he wasn't taken off me. That's the wrong phrase, actually. Then when I was ready, I handed him over, they weighed him, and that was that. So yeah, it was that kind of that calm experience in theatre that I just hadn't imagined that could happen. Mm. And also when she did the incision, she did actually do a much smaller incision, and they tried to walk him out. But unfortunately, my children have very large heads. And so he wasn't coming out that easily. And so she did actually have to make it slightly bigger on one side to get out his very large head. But yeah, it was amazing. And it was calm, and there was the music, and it was just us, and he stayed with me. And it was everything, I suppose, that kind of like final pushing stage is, just in a different, it just looked different, but I felt like we emulated as much of the kind of the final stages of labor as possible. And that's what I walked away from going, yeah, that was positive.
And looking back now, obviously it was a super, it sounds beautiful, Amy. It sounds beautiful and empowering, and like you were really listened to and you had individualized birthing care, which is so important. Looking back at it now, do you think that your birth with Beau has gone some way to heal your birth with Huxley? I know that was like awfully traumatic, and there's so many pieces to that puzzle, but do you think it's played a part in helping you heal?
Yeah, I really do, because I think it has, for two reasons. Number one, I got to have that kind of like newborn bubble, and I just didn't have it with Huxley. And the more I speak to women who have had traumatic experiences, they're like, yeah, I didn't have it either. And I constantly felt guilty about that at the time. But I was just in survival mode for, God, 6 months, I would say. And so with Beau, I had it, but I also feel a little bit guilty that I didn't have it with Huxley, because I think having a calm birth and having the newborn bubble made me realise what I'd missed out on before.
Mm, double-ended sword, isn't it, in that aspect. It's hard.
It is really hard, but it also has helped me. It definitely helped me heal from that experience, because it's helped me realise that actually a lot of that was out of my control. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't about my terrible choices. It wasn't about like my body failing me. It was about, unfortunately, a bad run of events. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose this birth like reinstilled my confidence in myself, in my decisions, in my body. And I just think me as a mum, because I have had that kind of like that newborn experience and just like the feeding, the cuddles and the being up, but being really present with it and being like, you know, I can do this and I can do a really good job of it. It's just last time I just wasn't in a good place to see that I was doing a good enough job, if that makes sense. I'm sure I did a brilliant job, but I just couldn't see it at the time.
Yeah, I always say in the eyes of your baby, you are doing the best job. Like, but as ourselves, we always like pick ourselves to pieces, don't we? Goes back to that thing. What would we say to our best friend? Probably much nicer things than we're going to say to ourselves. Now, Amy, when we sort of started talking, you mentioned that, you know, fairy lights, water birth, positive affirmations was plan A. Do you think you were mourning those physical elements of that birth? So that the actual fairy lights and actual water immersion, or do you think it was those thoughts, those feelings, that feeling safe and calm and empowered, was that more what you were after rather than those physical things? Because I think sometimes they get confused.
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of both. Mm-hmm. So I was under general anaesthetic when Huxley was actually born, and I didn't wake up for 4 hours later. And so I had no awareness that he'd been born, and I wasn't even aware. We didn't know that he was a little boy. Like, it was meant to be a surprise. And so I missed the moment. So I think the moment of being like, it's a girl, it's a boy, and like raising your baby up, like, you know, something off The Lion King. I think I really mourned that because I just didn't have that moment. And I also think that because I've done so much kind of work on myself over the years, and, you know, I love my yoga, and, you know, I was very fit up until the end. Like, I wanted to feel the experience of giving birth and the breathing and all of that. And so to not have that, that's the part when I was like, how has my body failed me? Like, I've been doing yogic breathing since I was a kid. Like, my mum and my nan are yoga teachers. And so I was just like, how have I not been able to do that? And so I think it was twofold. Yeah, it was the missing the things that you see on social media. Mm. And then also the not getting to experience the feeling. Because I really wanted that feeling.
And do you think you've healed those feelings? Because you did feel giving birth. I know it was abdominally, not vaginally, but you, who says that one is above the other? You know, they should both, in my opinion, be equally as empowering and incredible as a woman.
So I think I've gone a long way. I don't think I've totally healed them. I think I've made peace with it. Okay. Because I think I was wedded to a reality and wedded to a fantasy that was never going to be a reality. Like, the facts are is that my body can only cope with pregnancy up until 36 weeks. And then I get to 36 weeks and, you know, my liver just can't cope, which is why I develop obstetric cholestasis. And so when you start looking at the facts, you go, well, that birth is never going to really exist in your life, because the women that are having those births haven't got the complications. Yeah. And actually your reality is that you've got the complications. And so what is the best case scenario for that situation? And so when I talk to myself rationally like that, I definitely go, you know, it was amazing. I feel healed. And then I see pictures and I'm really honest about it. I see pictures and I do go, God, I would still have loved that experience. And just because I think I would have really enjoyed it. Not that I think that experience is better than the one that I had. I just think I'd have really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And also the fact that if someone with obstetric cholestasis, let's say, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 generations ago, we wouldn't have necessarily identified and known how to manage obstetric cholestasis. And actually, you probably wouldn't have given birth to a wonderful, healthy little boy. That's our reality, isn't it? Whereas now, it wasn't the birth experience that was plan A, but you're still able to have a lovely, healthy pregnancy and a positive birth experience and a healthy baby at the end. So actually, that's a massive win, isn't it? I think.
And we were both healthy out of it. And so that is the massive win about this decision. And I was present, I was listened to, I got as many of the actually I got all of my list of preferences, because that woman, she's like my angel, that consultant. And I spoke to her afterwards. Actually, I dropped her in a card and she phoned me up and I just said, I appreciate like how tough it is, and for you to go above and beyond to create that experience for me just means so much. And then she was crying on the phone and she was just like, it is really tough at the moment, but this is why I went into this career, because I wanted to give the best possible care to women as possible, and that was the best care that I could give you, so I just had to make it happen. That was an amazing phone call, because I just felt like she got something out of it too. Because I think that she, as she said, she is so stretched and she's giving care that isn't, not saying that it's not always the best possible, but potentially doesn't align with her wishes. Mm-hmm. And so that day she got to do something with her profession to help, to help me, to help Bo. And it was magic. And they're all talking about it on the maternity ward, because the midwife was just like, this has never happened. We've never walked a baby out, and he's never still been attached. And why don't we do the checks back in the room? Why don't we just let mum and baby like be there together, rather than, wrapping them up in towels, because that's just what we do? Because I think that's what they realized out of it, is that actually, yes, sometimes that baby might need to not go straight to mum, because maybe the baby does need a bit of help, or maybe the baby is too cold and the baby does need to be wrapped up in towels, and then that's the safest thing. But actually, until that presents, surely the other, there's an argument that baby can be on mum, and you can be together. But then if something presents, then actually, go to the next kind of option.
Oh, 100%, Amy. Like 25% of women have cesarean births. It's about time we change things. And that like, for anyone listening who's a healthcare professional, those things that you just said, that you felt listened to, you felt heard, you were empowered as an individual, not just a statistic coming in for a planned cesarean section. That's where things have to change, I think. That's where it's super game changing in terms of making sure that all birth is empowering, is making sure every woman is treated as an individual and is listened and is heard and respected. Those wants and choices are respected, and those conversations happen, because it's so important.
And I think it's from like a, sorry to jump in, but I think from a kind of like a patient standpoint, you just have to feel confident enough to be able to have those conversations. And I think that that's what a few women have reached out to me and said, like, God, I'd love to have these preferences, but how do I go about it? Mm. And the thing is, you just have to ask, I think, and you just have to be able to, you have to be able to articulate your wishes. And I think with a rationale, but then also be open to actually some of them, they might not be able to facilitate because of hospital policy. And when you are giving birth in the NHS and it's not a private hospital, like you can't call all the shots. But if there is no reason why, and it's just the way that things have been done, or it's just the way that this consultant has normally done things, then then there is the conversation to say, well, actually, like, how could we facilitate this? And if your hospital can't facilitate what you're after, then, you know, you've got the right to give birth wherever you want. So you could go to another hospital within your kind of like area, couldn't you? Or, I mean, or you could go to Scotland, but I don't think that's a good idea. Just because of the distance.
We're going to have a lot of babies coming out on the motorways now, Amy. Because I'm heading to Scotland.
But yeah, and so I just found that writing everything down was really helpful, and taking that to any kind of appointments with me. And I would say that if anyone's thinking about a planned cesarean early on, like, start talking to your midwife now and kind of like get clear on what kind of is you can do in your local hospital. And they can also facilitate the conversations with like the consultant midwives and those type of people, can't they? So that, yeah.
And having it written down is brilliant, because it's clear as day for everybody. So it's really nice. Yeah. Everyone's on the same page. You know, it's an easy discussion on the day because it's there in black and white. And actually, I would encourage perhaps even women that are planning a vaginal birth, is we know that there's always that risk of an unplanned cesarean, or like you, Amy, 2 days before, things change up. So actually, why not think about, you know, I always say plan for birth A to Z. Let's include actually some preferences that would be important to you if you did give birth by cesarean.
Yeah. And do you know what? I even said, so my nan had knitted Huxley a hat, and I wanted to put the same hat on Bo.
Yeah.
And so, because I thought about what was really important to me, like emotionally as well as physically from this birth. And that kind of sat under the emotional bucket, or sat in the emotional bucket. And so I even said that to them, because I was like, you know, can you rather than having one of the hats put on that the hospital provides, which are so sweet, but I just felt like we didn't need another knitted hat. My nan had knitted this hat for Huxley. I wanted to put it on my next baby. And actually what I then was told was, we're really sorry, we have to put a red hat on the baby when he's born because you've had anaesthetic. So we just need to know that, so when we come round to do the checks, it's flagged up that, you know, your baby's had an anaesthetic. And because I'd had that conversation and they'd actually explained the reason why, I felt okay about it. But had I have taken the hat and then I tried to put the hat on and then they'd said no, and not really had and not understood, I would have felt really frustrated. So I just think that if there's anything that you feel is important to you, to the women listening in, even if it's really, you think it's a really small thing, pop it on your list and ask. And like I took one of Huxley's cuddly toys into theatre because I knew I was going to struggle with having the epidural put in my back, or the spinal block, sorry. Yeah. I knew that I'd find that probably one of the most distressing moments about
that was going to be a potential trigger, I guess.
Yeah. And so I just asked if I could take in one of his cuddly toys, and I just took his little lamb, and they said yeah, absolutely fine. And so I sat there whilst they were doing the spinal block, and I was just holding it with my eyes closed and doing the breathing, and that just helped me feel really safe. So I think it's just thinking about what other people have done that you think that you would like to replicate in your birth when researching, if that's possible, and then also what really matters to you.
Yeah, I love that. And often it's the small things that make the biggest difference, isn't it? So never underestimate those small little things. Now, right. Amy, I just wonder, now, obviously with Huxley's birth, you went into the fourth trimester with a whole lot of trauma, a whole lot of mental scarring that later on needed unpicking and trying to heal. How was that different this time with Beau, having had the birth you had?
Oh, it was completely different. Mm. Like I said earlier, it made me realise that I didn't have the newborn bubble with Huxley, but then I was suddenly in it with Bo, and my God, it was amazing. And I didn't want to go anywhere, and I didn't want to see anyone. I just wanted to be on the sofa with my tiny little baby, and I just binged various series online, and it was amazing. And I don't know, with Huxley, I was so eager to get out and about. And I think that just try and kind of feel normal.
Probably busy your mind, right? So that you weren't focusing on what had just happened. You were trying to take yourself elsewhere, I suppose.
But with Bo, I was like, no, the rest of the world doesn't exist to me. I am just happy here. And so that was really different. I'd like to say that I did all the things which I know can help recovery. My pelvic floor squeezes, sleeping in the day.
Eating,
you know,
lots
all
of cake.
Those... Yeah, I didn't. I could have done my pelvic floor squeezes on the sofa, but I just, do you know what? I just didn't. I just wanted to be. And so for the first couple of weeks, that's all I did. And then unfortunately, and I know a lot of mums with two will understand this, and there is a big difference when you have your second to your first, because you've still got to look after your first. So, you know, there are times in the day when you can't just lie on the sofa. And then there are also the lovely nursery bugs that they bring home, just to kind of like pull you right out of your newborn bubble. And so we had all of that going on, but it was still amazing just to be together. But the one thing that I would say that we did do differently in the fourth trimester was I was a lot more open to help from my husband with like feeds and night times and just being away from Beau. So when I say away, I mean like in the guest bedroom. I didn't go check myself into a hotel, although there were times when
nice spa day.
I wish I did. But with Huxley, I felt like I couldn't do that, and I felt like I had to be the one that did everything. Mm. Whereas with Beau, I was like, if I don't do this one feed, or if Ted, you know, if Ted does this part of the night, that's not a bad thing. That's a great help. Yeah. And so yeah, so I've just said yes to a lot more help, and you know, it's been great.
And that, I mean, that change in your mindset and the way that you've been in that postpartum has to be linked to those births, doesn't it? That need to be with Huxley, because you didn't have that, and then that ability to be relaxed into accepting help and having a healthy distance from Beau at times, you know, to protect your well-being, that just has to be linked to having had that incredible first bonding experience, doesn't it? Like it must be.
Yeah, feeling okay with not being the person who does everything 24/7. And I wasn't, you know, Ted was brilliant with Huxley and helped so much, or, you know, I don't even want to say helped, because it feels like he was helping me out. He just mucked in and like parented.
He was a dad.
Child.
He was being his dad. Yeah, yeah.
But I was so protective over the feeding and what Huxley had to be doing and when and all of things like that, that I just wasn't like that with Beau. And what I would say with Beau with the fourth trimester, one of the things that we did do, and I think this will probably be like a bit of advice that I would pass on to other women, was that I realized that my shower is like my thing in the day that can make everything okay.
It's like a therapy session, isn't it, in the shower?
Yeah. I've had some moments in our shower. But we figured out how I could always get my shower. And we kind of have this like unwritten rule that you just don't interrupt the shower. So we just, you know, and we had to timetable like how we would both have showers with the two kids. But we just made sure that that happened. And that was, you know, in those early weeks when you're feeding sometimes every 90 minutes. So it's so relentless. But just to, at one point in the day, to press pause and all of that, and to know that whatever happens whilst I'm in the shower in the bathroom for 20-30 minutes isn't my problem. And that made such a difference. Whereas I think with Huxley, I'd like run out the shower and I'd be like, I need to feed him right now. Whereas, you know, actually he could wait 10 minutes and Ted, you know, and Ted could bounce him about and there distract might be him. A few tears. Yeah, but it's okay. And that I think that's the one thing that I've realized is that, you know, that was really important to me. How did we make that happen? And it's okay that there are tears. Like sometimes you just can't avoid them. But as long as everyone is safe and loved and, you know, fed and watered and all of that, then it's okay.
Yeah, have that shower. It's not selfish. It's self-love, which is a complete necessity. It's not an indulgence. Like, we need that. We have human needs as well. And I always find it interesting because I feel like as mums, we totally count like a drink or a shower as an like as a bit of an indulgence or a bit of like me time. But people on death row or like prisoners are allowed hydration and to wash. It's ridiculous that we feel like we can't have that as mums.
And it's probably the only 10, 20 minutes, 10, 20, 30, however long you get in your whole 24-hour period when actually you get to mentally just like shut everything off if you know, if you've got somebody who can be there with the kids and just have a bit of you time. And I realised because I wasn't doing any exercise, I wasn't leaving the house by myself. And this time around, I haven't been out with the pram that much because obviously I've got Huxley and I've just got other stuff to do. And so that was my one sacred thing in the 24 hours that I knew that if I had my shower and I could either cry just or like put a podcast on with a speaker or you know just whatever, that was my time to just to be.
I love that. Amy, can I ask you before I let you go, because I know you're super busy, just for three top tips for mums who might be planning a cesarean birth.
Okay, so number one, I would say go around your house and put everything at like hand level so that you're not having to like reach above or reach down to pick things up, because that's what I really struggled with. A friend actually gave me a litter picker to be able to like pick things up off the floor, which was I thought was genius, but it is also quite hard to kind of have baby and a litter picker on you at all times. So I would just move everything if you can into like, if you've got a chest of drawers and you know that you're going to wear things, which is normally in the bottom drawer, put it in the top drawer so you don't have to bend. Go into your kitchen and, you know, for the time being, have a couple of teacups and your tea bags and your coffee or whatever out on the side, so it's just not at like kind of reaching above level. Same in like, you know, fridge and those type of things. So I would definitely spend a bit of time just thinking about what do I need on a daily basis and is it accessible. Secondly, I would say wear something into hospital which you can wear back out again. So I wore a jumpsuit because I knew that actually it had poppers on the front and it wouldn't rub on my scar, and I knew it was easy to get on. So I would probably avoid like leggings and things that kind of you really have to pull up. I didn't really start wearing them actually until about 6 weeks afterwards. I kind of tried to opt for looser things just because I didn't want to do the struggle of trying to pull things up. So I'd say wear something like a jumpsuit in that's all like a dress, because then you can just chuck it on and you know that it's got no buttons. And then lastly, I would say, give people visiting hours. So you are well within your right. Like, it's lovely that everyone wants to come over and they say that they'll come over to do things, but the reality is you will end up making people tea and just sitting around as they cuddle your baby. And so they might bring over some food, and a lovely friend of mine baked a pie and brought it over. But, you know, it's still, you've still got visitors. So just be totally okay in yourself and know that it's okay to say, I would love to see you. What would work for me is between 2 and 2:30, or what would work for me is between 9 and 10, and put a time limit on it, because of course they're going to want to hang out and cuddle your new gorgeous baby. Who doesn't want to cuddle the new gorgeous baby? But actually that nap time might be your normal shower time, or like your time when you could have a rest. And so, yeah, just be really honest with yourself about what you need. Or you might say to them, yes, please come over for the whole afternoon. I could really do with a bit of help. But
choose your visitors wisely, I think.
exactly. And yeah, just say, people offer, and be okay about saying yes. So they would be my tips.
Amy, thank you so much for coming on to chat and for sharing such a personal experience that I know is going to help so many women who are, you know, planning for either an unplanned or an unplanned cesarean birth, but making sure that birth is still incredibly empowering. And as part of the mission to make sure that when every woman gives birth, they feel like superwomen, and that we abolish this feeling of, you know, having failed or being let down by our bodies, because it's just impossible and we should not let those words out of our mouths. So thank you for shouting about your lovely birth.
Thank you for having me on. And also, there's obviously some kind of like magic touch coming through Zoom and being sent upstairs to Bo, because I messaged you before this show and was like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to manage to record this, because Bo is not napping and he's, you know, he's changing things up today. So we'll have to see how we go. And now I'm looking at my baby camera and it's like, hey, mum, I was helped to sleep 2 hours and 15 minutes ago. So can we just Zoom every day?
Absolutely,
so we
fine.
Can get this long nap thing. Like,
sounds good. In fact, actually, Amy, if we could do it overnight, that would work even better for me.
Okay, maybe we'll just have to like do recordings and like play them to each other or something.
Oh, I love it. Well, whilst Bo is asleep, please have a nice drink and put your feet up and chill out for a little bit while you can.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you to everyone for listening. I am more than happy to answer any questions about gentle C-sections on Instagram, so if you do want to pop up in my DMs to ask anything, obviously I can't give out medical advice, but I can share like anything more on preferences which I put forward. And if not, congratulations on your pregnancies and wishing you all a really positive birth experience.
Oh, Amy, you're a star. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'd be hugely grateful if you could take a moment to leave a quick review. It honestly means the world to me to hear from you as a listener. And of course, to ensure you don't miss upcoming episodes, hit subscribe too. Remember, I'm here to support you through pregnancy, birth, and beyond, through my range of pregnancy, birth prep, and postpartum courses at midwifepip.com. I hope to get to know you better and to help you on your empowering journey soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.